It is now 8:30, and we're pleased to have with us Kansas 2nd District Congressman Derek Schmidt. It is our monthly update, and several things to update here for listeners as we head into the weekend.
Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. It's good to be back with you.
Glad to have you on board with us here this morning, as usual, and we're glad to get updates here on a number of different topics. And I guess before we get started here on the topic list, how busy are things in Washington, D.C. now with the end of the year really in sight?
Well, it's all hurry up and wait. At this point, it's clear that the annual appropriations bills are not going to be finished by Tuesday. So the prudent thing to do, we think, is allow some additional time. Don't have a government shutdown. Don't disrupt everybody's lives. Just go to stay the status quo for another 45 days or so and give us a few more weeks to get some of these bills buttoned down. I think several are close. So that's our position in the House. We passed what they call a continuing resolution, but it's not like the ones that we've seen in the past that are hundreds of pages long with all this stuff in them. I mean, this is a very short bill. It's like 20 pages, and it basically just says keep doing what we're doing for another 45 days or so. We think that makes sense. Senate has not agreed to that yet, and so we're just in a wait-and-see posture. We've done our part, and we'll see what position they take and then work it out. But that's where things stand.
There's obviously the threats anyways of the possibility of shutting down the federal government. Do you see that really as just posturing right now at this particular stage? Maybe as a way to maybe get quote-unquote better deals for certain sectors?
Well, you know, every year about this time, at the end of the federal fiscal year, we go through something like this. And so here we are once again. I don't know how serious the folks are in the Senate. It's a minority in the Senate, but minority has a lot of sway because it takes 60 votes to break a filibuster in the Senate. A simple majority doesn't do it, which is why we were able to pass a bill in the House that just says kind of keep things going and give us another, you know, roughly 5 weeks, give or take 6 weeks. To get these bills nailed down and done. But the Senate's not in that position yet. The minority has to agree. They haven't agreed. Senator Schumer's been very clear. They're not going to give an inch, but their demands are, and some of them are just outrageous, and I think they know it. Things like, they want to go back and wind up spending more money than we were spending before we did some modest budget reductions earlier this year. They want to restore some of the eligibility requirements for folks who are not citizens for public benefits. I mean, some of this is just, they know it's not going to be agreed to. And so I don't know how much is posturing. I don't know how much is genuine. I just know that we seem to be fighting over something that everybody I thought agreed on, which is keep things going until we can work out these issues. So we'll see what the Senate does.
Well, the movement has to be done fairly quickly, and when you mention fairly quickly in the federal government, obviously sometimes those two things don't mix well. That is that's for sure.
Absolutely true. So, you know, we're sort of waiting. It's like a tennis match, I suppose, and the ball's on the other end of the court. There's nothing else for us to do in the House because we already passed the keep the government open, keep things operating extender, and so we're waiting to see what the Senate does with it. If they agree, it'll go to the president. If they have a different plan, they'll send it back to us, and then we'll consider that. But so we're in wait-and-see mode right now.
Congressman, let's touch on, if we could for a moment, political violence and what we're dealing with there. You know, the assassination of Charlie Kirk recently and other incidents as well. Your take on what we're dealing with here.
Well, we're at one of those moments in U.S. history that sadly do come along from time to time where there seems to be an uptick in people who decide that the way to resolve differences is through violence. And so just in the last, year and a quarter, year and a half, we've seen President Trump shot, then candidate Trump shot in Pennsylvania. There was a second attempt on his life in Florida that fortunately was interrupted. We had the assassination, the murders of the state legislators up in Minnesota. We had the recent assassination of Charlie Kirk in front of a bunch of college students on a campus in Utah, and even lesser profile incidents, but no less consequential, including the shooting at the ICE facility in Dallas earlier this week. And so we shouldn't have to say it, but it bears repeating, violence is never the way to resolve political differences. So we can strongly disagree on the direction of the country, on the priorities of policy, on what's good for America, but we're never going to work out those disagreements by people taking up arms against others. So This needs to stop. It needs to tamp back down. The genie needs to be put back in the bottle, whatever metaphor you want. And I'm hopeful that that is an increasingly widely shared view. I think that whenever we have these moments of eruptions of violence, people of goodwill come together and say, knock it off. Let's go back to resolving our differences the way we're supposed to in this country.
Congressman, do you see any one specific thread here that's kind of underlying factors here for what we've seen over the last, and I'm just going to use the last, basically since summer last year, last 15 months, with the rapid addition of violent incidents here across the country, or are you seeing maybe multiple potential factors at play here with this? And with that in mind, how do you wind up putting the genie back in the bottle?
Well, it's hard to say. The public reporting on all of this can be very confusing. I follow it closely, and I find it difficult to tell exactly what's accurate and what's speculation and what's, you know, what's real and what's not. And obviously, most of us are not privy to the sort of inside information that a law enforcement investigation necessarily gathers. I trust the truth will come out in the end, and we'll figure out exactly what, you know, has happened in each of these incidents. But you know, it appears to be predominantly, right at this moment, people who are disgruntled, heavily disgruntled with, you know, a direction of the country. The bulk of those violent incidents that I just described over the last year and a quarter appear to have come from people that are more left-leaning, unhappy with what they view as a more rightward movement in the country's politics, but not all of them. Certainly the shootings up in Minnesota don't seem to bear that mark. They appear to be the opposite. So I just, at the end of the day, we just cannot accept, we cannot normalize the resolving of political disputes through violent actions. That is something that has set us apart from many parts of the world, and we need to cherish and preserve that.
Again, joined by Kansas Congressman Derek Schmidt. One of the things I know you wanted to talk about here too was the Rural Health Transformation Bill, which
RHTP,
apparently is now set up, and it sounds like at least with a news release from Governor Laura Kelly, state is now starting to work towards the application process towards that funding.
Yes, really pleased that the state is going to take advantage of this opportunity. It is, I think, an underappreciated opportunity. I've described it as a generational opportunity to rethink some of the basics of how we deliver quality health care services to the many Kansans who live in rural communities. We've lost, about a half a dozen hospitals have closed in Kansas in recent years. We have maybe 60 more on the injured list. And that's not related to any current policy decisions. That has been true as, you know, sort of markets have changed over recent years. And so, you know, stepping back from the fights of the day, the issues of the day, we really need to take a hard look at how we are delivering and paying for healthcare services in rural communities, because the trend line in rural healthcare has suggested that we've got some problems with the model. It just doesn't fit dynamics of a modern rural marketplace. So, you know, this new Rural Healthcare Transformation Fund, we created it as part of the Reconciliation Bill earlier this year, put $50 billion in. It's supposed to go toward not just sort of more money into the current system, but toward rethinking and trying different ways of delivering quality services that will be sustainable in rural communities to sort of get out of this cycle of financial decline for a lot of our rural healthcare institutions. I was talking with somebody the other day who was, skeptical about all of this and said, you know, $50 billion, it's only $50 billion. And I laughed. Said, first of all, if we've reached a point in this country where you use the word only in front of $50 billion, then, you know, perhaps we ought to reflect on where we are. But secondly, this is $50 billion additional dollars in the Medicaid program targeted to specifically to rural healthcare deliverers. To put that in context, the total amount of money that is spent by the federal government through the Medicaid program on rural healthcare services, rural hospitals, is about $20 billion per year. That's status quo. We are adding $10 billion per year to that $20 billion for each of the next 5 years. That is a 50% increase in the amount of Medicaid money flowing in. So it is a substantial increase. And I'm really glad to see the state's going to try to get out in front, claim our share of that money. And you know, we've worked with the Kansas Hospital Association and some other providers who are excited about the prospects for the first time in a long time, having some resources to try different ways of doing what we all want, which is delivering quality care services to people wherever they live.
What is our share of the money here in Kansas? Do you know?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
What, Congressman, is our share of the money here in Kansas? Do you know?
It'll depend upon how the application is received and reviewed. So there's not a, you know, a fixed amount that goes to this state or that. That's why the state's application process is so very important. And I'm really pleased to see the state step up on that.
Really quickly here, Congressman, I know the governor's news release, which came out, I think, late yesterday, said that the money that's involved here for the state won't cover some of the cuts that are also as part of H.R. 1, House Resolution 1, that I think this is contained in. What's the difference, I guess, between, on the funding side, what was in place versus what's going to be in place here with the transformation program? And it sounds like this is more geared towards kind of a renewed look at coverage as opposed to doing things the same old way.
Right. It's an apples and oranges comparison. And, you know, sadly, you know, politics get wrapped up in any discussion of health care, which is unfortunate, but it's just the reality of the world that we live in. The problem with the current Medicaid system is that the rate of growth is unsustainable. We've added about 50% to the federal cost of Medicaid over the last 5 years. Think about that growth curve. It's a 60-year-old program that's grown by 50% in just the last 5 years. That is not a sustainable trajectory. And if the program is not sustained, it means that everybody who relies on it is put at risk, including traditional Medicaid populations like we have in Kansas, people who are disabled, pregnant women, children, the folks that everybody agrees program's designed for and we need help. So we have to be able to think about doing things differently and more effectively. We can't just keep pouring more and more money into the current system. And so it is an apples and oranges comparison, and I'm really thrilled that we have some resources coming available to do the second part of that, the thinking through how we smartly and effectively deliver services.
Well, Congressman, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for joining us on a monthly basis, and we look forward to our October chat.
Thank you. I'll look forward to it. Take care.
Have a great day. Kansas Congressman Derek Schmidt joining us, 2nd District Congressman, monthly. So we'll have Derek in next month, as always, right here at KVOE.
Does a wonderful job with updating the public, and we're glad that he is wonderful and, you know, gets a chance to spend his time.